This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Mira Sivasodhi. In our health and living segment today, we're going to be discussing living with osteoporosis. Now, we often think that osteoporosis is a natural and expected part of aging, but that as we grow older, our bones will grow weaker and even more brittle. But is that really the case? Well, in conjunction with World Osteoporosis Day, which is observed annually on the 20th of October, we take a look at how osteoporosis impacts quality of life and, more importantly, whether it can be prevented in the first place. So joining me today, we have a spine surgeon and a joint surgeon, Dr. K.S. Sivanandan, a consultant orthopedic trauma and spine surgeon. Also joining us, Dr. Sureshan Sivanandan, consultant orthopedic arthritis and sports surgeon from LT Orthopedic Hospital. If you have a question for them, give us a call. The number is 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or just tweet us at BFM Radio. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. How are you today?
Fine.
Wonderful, thank you.
Wonderful. Let's talk about osteoporosis. Dr. Siva, the burden of osteoporosis in Malaysia, especially we're inching towards becoming an aging population. So say about, I think we can't seem to decide, I think 2030 or 2035, which means 15% of our population will be 60 years and above. And that is of a growing concern. What is that burden in Malaysia? Would you, you know, be you know, based on what you see in your practice?
You see, worldwide, the number of patients aging is increasing. Actually, World Health Organization has, way back in 1979, defined young elderly from 60 to 79 years old. Whereas elderly, they are those above 80 years old.
Okay.
So in many countries, the elderly, their number is increasing quite rapidly. Okay. And Malaysia is no exception to it. And looking at the statistics of osteoporosis, we find that among the three races, the Chinese have a higher rate of osteoporosis compared to the Malays and Indians. Mm-hmm. Recently, there was a statistic done by the University of Kabangsaan, I think in 2019, where they got a group of Chinese population from the Klang Valley, and they found that at the age of 40 years old, 15.3% were osteoporotic.
Right.
But at the age of 71 years old, 32.6% were osteoporotic. So you see the difference. And also, women are almost twice as likely to have osteoporosis than men. In their survey, they found that women had an incidence of 18.9%, whereas men had an incidence of 11.5%.
Okay. So this 40, at the age of 40, at 15.3%, is that general population or you just...
This is for the Chinese.
For the Chinese population.
For the Malays and Indians are much less.
Yeah, okay. But we lead in other areas, diabetes,
yes,
hypertension, and even heart disease, don't
yeah
we? Dr. Suresh, do we know why the Chinese are more predisposed to this? Is it because of genetics or, you know, what is it?
Definitely, the genetics has a role to play. But, you know, you came across my most favorite topic, the silver tsunami. You
mm-hmm
know, I keep talking about the silver tsunami, and I think I mentioned this to you last week as well. The number of people over the age of 65 is going to be more than the number of younger people in the years to come. So it's very important for these, as I say, young elderly people to be able to live a fulfilling and exciting life and continue working. And part of that is to be able to address silent diseases like osteoporosis. So osteoporosis is a disease which you don't know that you have. And if you don't check for it, you won't know that you have it.
Yeah.
Until you fall and have a fracture.
Yeah. So in what, besides falls, how else does it present? Because symptoms are, you know, not really clear to you, isn't it? In what other areas would you know that, or is an indicator that you could be osteoporotic?
If patient comes, especially spine, if a patient comes to me and she walks in with a hunchback, and then you
oh,
take
no,
a...
Oh, no, you're looking at me, Dr. Yeah. Seva. Yeah. Oh, no, I'm 40.
No. If I'm not looking at... I'm just telling you, if a patient comes and when she's hunchback...
So that's what you do. Everybody who walks in, you look at their spine and whether they're hunched or not. Yeah.
And then if they give you a history, doctor, I have been losing height. And if that's a history that you have lost height in the last few years for 1 year, that is definitely due to osteoporosis. And then you have to go investigate and do a bone density, and don't wait for the fracture before you treat them, and you have to treat them early.
Okay, so I mean that's what we want to know, right? Yes. What are the signs so that we can actually go and get tested? And then what do you do? A bone density test? Is that what you do?
You see, first of all, in any for osteoporosis, they are prone to fractures. Now we must there are many reasons for osteoporosis. We have to eliminate the other causes of osteoporosis, like, for example, whether the patient is having disease, any particular disease, bone disease, or is he in any particular drugs, for example, is he on steroids, or his habits, see whether he's an alcoholic or is he a smoker, and see his eating habits, whether he's taking adequate food or adequate calcium or vitamin D. We have to investigate all this, and then we do a bone density, and then after doing the bone density, and then we can treat them accordingly.
Okay. Dr. Suresh, what about osteoarthritis? I mean, sometimes, what is the difference? Osteoarthritis is another age-related condition. Is it different? How is it different from osteoporosis?
So osteoporosis is when you have bone loss, whereas osteoarthritis is when your joints get worn out due to wear and tear. It's completely different pathophysiology, completely different process. So osteoporosis is when your bone resorption is more than your bone formation.
Okay.
Whereas osteoarthritis is basically damage to the joints.
Okay.
That happens when you get older.
Sure. So when osteoporosis, how does it present besides falls? For you as a joint surgeon, what sort of issues do you have to face or do you have to deal with when it comes to osteoporosis?
Well, the commonest side effect of osteoporosis is hip fracture. So you have what is called a fragility fracture. So it's a low energy fall. So just yesterday I was working late because a patient just fell from a standing height and sustained a fracture. Now, normally, if you fall from a standing height or from a stool, you won't fracture your bone.
No.
But if you're osteoporotic, you'll have a nasty fracture. And then you have to come and get it repaired with a plate or a pin. And sometimes if the fracture of the hip is bad, you might need to have a hip replacement. And as you know, that's one of my favorite topics, hip replacements.
Yes, it is indeed.
So we will talk about that. And
yes, but while you're on that topic of hip replacements, when you're osteoporotic, are there different considerations when you think about doing a hip replacement?
Yes, of course. So as I mentioned before, we have different types of hip replacements, cemented ones and uncemented ones. But for osteoporosis, you might want to go for a cemented hip replacement because the bone is very soft and weak and you need the bone cement to hold the implants in place.
Okay. What about you, Dr. Siva? I mean, how does osteoporosis play out in the spine, for an example?
You see, in an osteoporotic patient, the spinal fractures is the most common, you see. So when they come there, you see, even they just by either sneezing or bending down or lifting a weight, they can fracture the spine.
What?
They can, you see.
If it's bad,
can,
yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
So
you sneeze
just,
and fracture your spine.
Yes. We done osteoporotic just by bending down and lifting. Quite often, the old lady, I went to the garden and I was doing this. Then I've had very severe pain. Then she comes to me. Then I know it's definitely an osteoporotic fracture, an 80-year-old or 70 or 60 years old when they give the history. And luckily, most osteoporotic fractures can be treated conservatively. You see, we tell them to have bed rest, give them analgesics, and then at the same time, it is important to do the necessary tests and confirm that they are osteoporotic and not any other condition. And once this is done, we also treat them for the osteoporosis. There are ways of treating, giving drugs that prevents bone resorption or bone formation, and also see that they have adequate calcium and vitamin intake. So, and then with bed rest, and also if necessary, give a corset, most of them improve. But if after a week or two, they come back and they still say, doctor, it's very severe, I can't just bear it. And when we see this, we repeat the x-ray and we see the compression is much worse, then we have to actually, and she doesn't, can't tolerate the pain, then we have either the next step, what we do is, they call that by doing a minimally invasive procedure, we call this vertebral augmentation procedure. Mm-hmm. This vertebral augmentation procedure can be done either by doing a vertebroplasty, that means putting under x-ray control, putting a needle, and then with the position, with a prone position, we get the fracture reduced, and then injecting cement. The other procedure is kyphoplasty, where putting again a needle, we blow up the vertebra, and so that the fracture is reduced, and then we put a bone cement. And now there is also called a stentplasty, where we through the balloon we put up a stent, so that the stent is there, and then we put bone cement. This is the second modality of treatment. Now, if for any reason the patient, which is actually very rare, patient has neurological deficit, or if there is some form of instability, with gross instability or instability, which we know that this is going to be progressive, then surgical intervention is necessary.
Can you elaborate a little bit about neurological instability? What do you mean by
neurological instability is after the fracture, the patient says, oh, my legs are weak. I can't move my leg. You see, the strength in my legs are weak. Or if she says, suddenly I have no control of my urine. You see, these are called neurological deficit. Yeah. Now, instability means if you take a lateral x-ray, you find the number of vertebral bodies has compressed so much, there is severe kyphosis.
What does that mean?
Kyphosis means where the bone is shaped like an angle.
Okay.
So there is deformity of that. So this is called actually instability. So you can have either forward instability or lateral instability. So when these are there, then you have to do surgical intervention, provided we make the patient optimize the patient for the surgical intervention.
Okay, that's interesting that you said spine fractures are the most common when it comes to osteoporosis. Besides hip issues, we'll come back and find out other joint issues that can surface as a result of osteoporosis. I think there's one very important area we've not spoken about is falls, mm-hmm. Falls prevention amongst older people. But we also talk about younger people and the possibility of osteoporosis presenting then, because at 40 years old, you were mentioning just now, Dr. Siva, 15.3% of the Chinese population already has osteoporosis. And, you know, for me, 15.3% is still a lot for, and, you know, for a 40-something-year-old. So we'll come back and have more of that discussion. If you have a question for Dr. Siva or Dr. Suresh, give us a call. The number is 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's our Health and Living segment and we're discussing living with osteoporosis. Dr. K.S. Sivanandan, consultant orthopedic trauma and spine surgeon. Dr. Sureshan Sivanandan, consultant orthopedic arthritis and sports surgeon, both from LT Orthopedic Hospital with us, helping you answer anything you want to know about osteoporosis and your bones, your spine, your joints. You know, give us a call, 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Let's roll back a little. We've spoken a lot about, issues of the spine. For an example, you've spoken about hip issues, Dr. Suresh. Let's go back a little to talk about bone density. Let's talk about how bone density is built. Dr. Suresh, you want to just share that with us, especially among the younger people? How do we ensure bone density and prevent this whole idea of osteoporosis presenting later on in life?
I think the main way to ensure bone density is weight-bearing exercise. A lot of people are inactive. They're sitting, especially during the pandemic, they're working from home, they're sitting in the chair the whole day. They don't have weight-bearing exercise. So for bone density to be built, the bone needs to be mechanically stimulated. If the bone is not mechanically stimulated, you lose bone density. That's why when the people go to outer space, they become osteoporotic. And that's why, you know, if we want to go live in Mars, like Elon Musk wants us to go live in Mars, we have to solve the problem of how to prevent osteoporosis so that when you reach Mars, your bones are not going to collapse.
Yeah, so that's not going to be a possibility of us moving there now, is it?
I think we have to figure out a way. Either, you know, the Russians did a lot of research in this. And you know, back in the 90s, they used to inject ceramic into the patients, into the astronauts' vertebra to try and prevent the bone from softening.
Right.
I can tell you a lot about Russian research, but, you know, back to Earth. the most important thing to bear in mind is weight-bearing exercise.
Yeah, I'm just going to come back to you in a while. But you said about something about cement, right? A lot of cement is being used for the spine when you do surgery. Is that what it's actually doing? It's no, giving weight as I, well, no?
No, bone cement is an inert object where when the bone is collapsed, and when we reduce the bone by the prone position or whatever position you reduce, there's a vacuum created. And this vacuum is actually filled by bone cement.
Okay. All right. So not the same thing.
Ceramic is different.
Yes. I was just thinking whether cement was what we were working with here.
No. Ceramic is a different material.
Ceramic for Mars.
Well, if you want to be an interplanetary species, you have to think about that. But for Malaysia, I think weight-bearing exercise, very important. Because if you don't put weight, you don't have the mechanical stimulation, and then your bone becomes osteoporotic. Second one is, of course, vitamin D and calcium. How do you get vitamin D? From sunlight.
Yeah, but you know what, Dr. Suresh, most of us are vitamin D deficient.
Correct.
In this country.
Correct.
I am vitamin D deficient.
Because you know, you don't go out in the sun.
I do.
You're sitting in the dark.
I think it has
something
to do with genes. Yeah, I think genes do play a part as well.
Yeah. That's what.
So you must take your vitamin D.
You see, the important.
I'm on supplements. You know.
So the important thing about this risk factors. There are modifiable risk factors and non-modifiable risk factors. The non-modifiable risk factors is number one, age. When you get old, you're going to definitely lose bone. You see, in life, we achieve what you call the peak bone mass when you're about 25 to 30 years old. So when you, after that 30 years old, you slowly get to lose bone. And of course, if you are having some disease, it'll lose much more. And if you are a woman, postmenopausal, in the first, usually after 30 years, you lose, unless you're healthy and take the regular diet and all that. Average, they lose about 1% of bone mass, they lose a year. But after menopause, in the first 5 years, you lose 20%. So that is quite a lot. So that's why I always tell this patient when they come, especially the young one or parents who bring their children, see that there are modifiable factors. So actually this bone density, achieving a peak bone mass is like saving money. If you have enough money, so when you retire, you live comfortably.
Okay, but how do we save?
So how do you see that
achieve
the peak bone mass? So these are the modifiable factors. Number one, as Dr. Suresh says, healthy living, healthy exercise, and also not taking drugs that can cause accelerate the
loss of
bone. Like, for example, alcohol consumption. If it is said that if you take more than 3 glasses or 3 packs of alcohol per day, that is detrimental. Of course, there is some research, you say, if you take less than that, it is beneficial. But in men, you have to be very careful. You don't go overboard. And number two, smoking. These are things. And also, taking too much of caffeine is also bad. So these are things you have to look into. And also, if you're taking drugs, you have to consult your doctor that you're not taking too much of steroids or other medication that can enhance osteoporosis. And also, you have to check that your livers are all right, your liver is all right, and also the kidney is all right. So if we can control the modifiable risk factor, you can achieve a good peak bone mass, and after that, having a healthy liver, you can decrease the amount of
the
bone
loss. Okay. Sorry, you were going to add on.
No, I was just saying physical activity, calcium and vitamin D, and of course I was going to say about the drugs, alcohol, you know, you basically have to avoid that.
What about obesity? It's a big problem in this country. Does that play a part?
Luckily...
I'm just thinking that's weight.
No, luckily. I don't think...
Luckily,
I'm being silly here.
Luckily, you see, obesity, persons who are obese have a higher peak bone mass than a non-obese person. So if you find a girl who's thin, fair, she's most likely to be osteoporotic. On the other hand, if she's fat, not likely to be.
Ah.
And if you're obese, you have more cushioning. So when you fall, you're less likely to break your bone.
Okay, but that's not, I mean, you know, but you don't want to be, right?
Okay.
Not,
you don't
for
want
those
to be.
Reasons. You, certainly you, not for those
definitely
reasons.
Definitely, you have to get an optimal weight for that, you see.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Let's talk about falls. We're often worried about people falling among some adults, and the likelihood of falls, as you just mentioned, Dr. Suresh, you just had a patient who just, you know, the fragility, right? You tend to fall easily. What are fall prevention methods in which older people can think about, you know, so that this doesn't become a problem for them? Because once you fall, it just adds to all the other problems, right?
I think fall prevention is a big thing now. It's a big scientific studies. And you have to start with your home, okay? You have to secure your home, make sure there's no loose wires, no loose rugs, no pets running around, and that you can trip over, okay? And make sure your steps, you don't have loose carpeting, things like that. And of course, when you are doing your housework, try not to stand on a stool that is unstable, or try not to go up into any unstable situation. So that's fall prevention. Eyesight is also a big thing. So if you can't see where you're going, make sure your eyesight is good. And of course, other diseases can cause falls, like Parkinson's disease, things where you lose your stability. So of course, get a medical checkup, go for your medical screening, so that you're in good health.
Yeah. And we know, earlier on you spoke about the spine. You can go in minimally invasive, Dr. Siva, and treat these fractures of the spine. But what's the healing process like? Because most people would be older. Does it work against them in terms of the healing process?
This again depends on the type of fracture that you're dealing with. In a compression fracture, due to osteoporotic compression fracture, here we are just... by putting them in a prone position, we reduce the fracture, and then doing a minimally invasive technique. And then here, the bone cement stays there. So it is quite, of course, there are complications as in any surgery, but done properly, it's quite safe.
Okay. What about for the joints?
In what way?
In terms of the healing process for older people? Because,
well,
you know, when you do
total
hip replacements and total knee replacements in the elderly, and if they're osteoporotic, what's that healing process like?
Well, if you do the correct surgery, it can be quite quick. But here's a statistic that is quite important for your listeners to know. If 100 people have a hip fracture or neck or femur fracture, up to 50% of them would be dead in 1 year. Because the hip fracture is a big cause of mortality due to blood loss, dehydration. So when somebody has a hip fracture or a fractured neck or femur, you have to fix it within 24 hours so that the patient has the best chance to survive.
Okay.
And about the fall prevention, a lot of big companies are now getting into the bandwagon. Like, for example, Apple. The new Apple Watch has fall risk assessment. Everyone is understanding that falls can be a cause of mortality. And so fall prevention is very, very important.
Okay, all right. So coming back to the, total joint replacement, right?
Yes.
Let's talk about those who are osteoporotic. Would you treat them differently when you actually do surgery?
No, they would have the same type of surgery, minimally invasive, direct anterior approach for hip or whatever. But we would use cement to secure the implants in place. And if you recall, for people without osteoporosis, you can use uncemented implants. But for people with osteoporosis, you would use bone cement to secure it in place. And there should be no reason, if the surgery is done efficiently and quickly, the patient should be up and walking the next day.
Okay. And the aim of the treatment, Dr. Siva, when you actually do this minimally invasive methods for the spine, what would the aim of it, of the treatment? Is it to slow down the osteoporosis or reverse it or just bring back some kind of function?
No, actually, surgery doesn't cure osteoporosis. Surgery is just restoring the patient back to what he was before so that he can mobilize early. But at the same time, when we do the surgery, it is important that you treat the osteoporosis and we find the cause. If we find that it is senile osteoporosis or postmenopausal osteoporosis, we have to give drugs so that to actually slow down or slightly reverse. You can't get back to normal, slightly reverse the process of osteoporosis. So at the same time we do surgery, we have to also complement it by treating the osteoporosis.
Okay.
So there are many new drugs in the market that can reverse osteoporosis. And it's important. Say if your BMD, bone mineral density, is low, you must start on one of these medications that can reverse your osteoporosis.
I suppose the challenge here is to make sure you even identify you have osteoporosis when most people don't, right?
So the important thing is most doctors are aware that a patient, actually an old person, when he comes, anyone above 50, when they come to you with a fracture, the first thing they investigate is whether the patient is osteoporotic or not.
Yeah, 50 years old, older person. Yeah. No, Dr. Siva, young elderly.
Yes,
60. Yes. I'm 50 next year. I'm not going to go. I'm not young elderly yet.
You're only elderly after the age of 80.
Correct.
That's my WHO definition.
Very quickly, we have a question here from Sharon. She's asking, on osteoporosis, what types of calcium which are more beneficial or easier to absorb and retain in the body? Cow's milk, goat's milk, tablets, what would you recommend?
You see, if a patient has no medical condition, if you have a good diet that is dairy products, that, and if you can get in about 100 and, or 1,000 or 1,200 milligrams of calcium a day, that's good enough. And of course, if you have some certain medical condition where your absorptions are poor, then you have to have supplements. So the daily dose of calcium is about 1,200 milligrams, and they can come in either calcium carbonate or calcium citrate. So whatever it is all right.
But then you need to know you're deficient first, right?
Yes.
Correct. I mean, you don't need to supplement if you don't need it.
Correct.
As well.
That's correct.
And how do you find out?
That's where
blood test. You have to do a blood test. And blood test or blood test for calcium and blood test for vitamin D level.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people don't test for vitamin D. And I think that should be included in your yearly blood test.
And also you must see your doctor to check whether you have any comorbid factors.
You see,
whether your thyroid glands are all right, whether your hyperthyroidism, or whether your kidneys are all right, or whether your liver is all right. So the liver function, kidney function, especially in an elderly, all these things are important before you come to a disease.
One more question from Sharon about vitamin D. So she's saying, of course, the average worker probably doesn't get enough vitamin D. Just going out for lunch and three times a week exercising outdoors is probably not enough. Thus, do we need to take vitamin D supplements? Can we eat more natural foods? Is that enough? Which types of vegetables, natural foods would you recommend?
There are a certain type of fish oils. Fish oil is also contains a lot of vitamin D. And then, as you say, if you can't get it in the food stuff, then you have to see that you get at least 800 units of vitamin D per day. So this can either a lot of food stuff, like as fish oil, as I said, contains vitamin D.
But it goes back to the fact of whether or not you're deficient or not.
I think Sharon first needs to get the blood test done.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no point guessing or my vitamin. You can't tell.
Yeah.
Get the blood test done. If you are deficient, then start the supplement.
Okay. When we come back after the market update, there's a question here on why is it you said just now, Dr. Suresh, a hip fracture or a femur neck fracture must be rectified within 24 hours. You did say the thing of bleeding and all of that. We'll come back and revisit that question after this on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. In our Health and Living segment, we're trying to live with osteoporosis. Yeah, I think some interesting, we've spoken about the burden of osteoporosis in Malaysia, especially as we inch towards becoming an aged society. I think my takeaway so far from this discussion is I think you need to go and find out whether or not you have osteoporosis or not. And you can start as early as 40 years old. Yes. Just to be cautious. Check whether you are vitamin D deficient, check whether you have calcium deficiencies, and then take the precaution in the necessary steps after.
Especially in girls, it is important that whether they are amenorrheic. Mm-hmm. If below the age of 40 or 45, if they find they are amenorrheic, you must immediately go and see a doctor.
What does that mean?
Amenorrheic, you stop your there is no menstruation.
Okay.
So if you are amenorrheic, the chance of you getting osteoporosis is very, very high. So sometimes, especially some young girls, they take up sporting activities. Excessive sporting activity sometimes in young girls causes amenorrheic. And then if they are amenorrheic, then you find that the bone density, they won't reach the peak bone mass.
Okay.
So if that is so, please consult your doctor and see that.
I just want to find out the difference, Dr. Siva, because a lot of girls now have polycystic ovarian syndrome, and that can also lead to maybe girls having periods once a year, once in 6 months. So is that something that we should be cautious about?
Yes, very, very cautious. Because you see, when they do not have their period, the estrogen secretion is decreased.
Right.
And if the estrogen secretion is decreased, there is a very high chance of being osteoporotic.
Okay, all right. So that's interesting. That's good to know, actually. Because it seems to be the younger and younger girls seem to have PCOS now in a big way. Dr. Suresh, just coming back to the question here, why is it that you say that the hip fracture and femur neck fracture should be rectified within 24 hours?
Yeah, wonderful question. I think, why is this considered an orthopedic emergency? Because when you have a hip fracture, you lose a lot of blood, first of all. Secondly, you are immobile. And when you're immobile, you get pneumonia. So that can cause you to die. So we want to fix the fracture and get you mobilized as soon as possible. That's why when you have a hip fracture, I would wake up in the middle of the night to come in and fix the fracture for you so that the next morning you can start walking. You don't get pneumonia and you don't die.
Mm-hmm.
If I leave it too long, you get pneumonia and then it's bad.
You know, when you talk about total knee replacement, for an example, Dr. Suresh, there's this fear. I mean, most older people don't want to undergo that kind of surgery. If they can live with the pain, you know, and I'm talking about my mother here, she would rather do that than to go through surgery and do a knee replacement. How would you allay some of those fears? I mean, I understand now the recovery is fast, surgery is faster with technology. You just want to elaborate a little bit more on that.
I think the risk is very minimized because with the modern anesthesia techniques, with regional anesthesia and minimally invasive surgery, you can actually have a knee replacement and go home the next day. So it's become a very routine procedure now. And it's much better to have a pain-free knee than to live with the pain, because living with pain can actually shorten your life. And taking painkillers can cause gastric bleeding. There's a lot of side effects with these painkillers. So with a knee or a hip replacement, if you have one procedure that takes away your pain, you can live a pain-free, happy, healthy, and productive life.
Yeah. But I think that fear is still there. I'm sure you see it all the time as well in your practice. Dr. Siva, older people reluctant to do surgery. And what more? The spine surgery, Dr. Siva. Nobody wants to go to the spine with a knife. They always they think of it as a last resort.
You see, in spine surgery, it is important to see what is, when you need it. For a young girl, as I told you before, scoliosis, deformity, if you do not correct it, the risk is very high. You can get cardiovascular compromise, your cosmetic is bad, and when you find a big scoliotic curve, when you're old, you can be rest assured you'll be suffering with back pain. Now, other type of surgery, like for example, spinal stenosis, old people, quite often we get is like spinal stenosis and all that. Now, we always, in these type of cases, we always treat them conservatively first. It is only when we find that the pain is impossible to control, then we think of surgery. Other thing that we would advise the patient to go for surgery if she has a if he or she has a neurological deficit. Neurological deficit means there is some weakness or in the limbs, in the upper or lower limbs. And the third thing, if there is some instability, you find that the spine is such that it's going to topple over this way or that way, then we advise them to have surgery. If they don't have surgery, they'll be either wheelchair bound or bedridden.
Okay.
So they have to choose the choice. Yeah, and of course, in any surgery, we have to see that the patient is the comorbidity is all treated and patient is fit for surgery.
Okay.
But you must remember, surgery has advanced a lot in the last 10 years. We have so many new tech gadgets like robotics and all these things which make things very precise. And with the precision surgery, there's not much soft tissue disruption. So that's why the patients can get up and walk the next day, because there's so minimal disruption of the muscles around the joint and the spine, of course, because of robotic and navigation technology. It's like GPS for the human body. And
yeah.
So with all these new technologies, you can actually do a major surgery with very little side effects, and you don't even feel it.
I wish I could believe you there.
But we have patients who have come with major, major surgery, and they walk going home the next day. Like yesterday, I did a fracture surgery. Today, the patient is walking around.
Right.
So,
fantastic.
You know.
Okay, we have one more question here. Does osteoporosis lead to spondylolisthesis in the lumbar spine? This word keeps coming back to me all the time.
It's haunting you.
Actually, it is.
No, spondylolisthesis is actually...
Thank you.
let me explain what is spondylolisthesis is. Spondylolisthesis is actually slipping of one vertebra over the other.
Okay.
So, actually... In a degenerative spine, you have what you call a degenerative spondylolisthesis, whereas osteoporosis as such doesn't cause spondylolisthesis as such, provided the posterior joints are all right, then it doesn't cause. So I think here the person is confusing with degenerative spondylolisthesis.
Okay.
So degenerative spondylolisthesis is entirely different from osteoporosis.
Okay, that's good. So let's talk about very quickly the prognosis for hip replacements or knee or joint replacements, Dr. Suresh. What is the prognosis for patients after they carry out these procedures when they have osteoporosis? Can they go back to living normal life? I mean, what does life look like for them?
Life is wonderful for them because they have no pain, they have full range of movement, and they can get back to their activities. And I think I mentioned this before, Medicare, which has done hundreds and thousands of patients in the database, they actually did a study of the top three most satisfying surgeries. First was cataract, second was hip replacement, third was knee replacement. So patients are very, very happy with these surgeries.
Sure. Okay, we have a question here from a listener. Can you patch the call through, please? No? Okay, that's all right. Okay, we have some technical problems. What about for yourself, Dr. Siva? The prognosis for patients who go through spinal surgery as a result of osteoporosis, yes. What does life look like for them?
You see, as I told you earlier, most osteoporotic spinal fractures can be treated conservatively, that is, without surgery. We only do surgery for those patients who have persistent pain or the compression is getting worse, then we do surgery. Now, after osteoporotic vertebroplasty or kyphoplasty, they can get back to activities that they were previously doing. But unlike hip surgery, I wouldn't be that optimistic as far as spine surgery is concerned. We have to tell them they have to have certain amount of restrictions as regards what they can do, the housework or gardening and all the rest of it.
Okay. Wong has a question. Wong? Go ahead, Wong.
Hi, doctor. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes. I had an X-lift on my spine 5 years ago. I was wondering, is there a lifespan on the implant? I had it when I was 45 years old.
Okay, thank you very much, Wong. So an ex-limb surgery 5 years ago, does that, is there a lifespan for that implant?
No, usually if you do implant for a spine, it is lifelong. You don't have to take it. The only only reason why we have to take it out, if she had no neurological deficit after the spinal surgery, if there is an infection. Otherwise, no, it is lifelong.
I see. Fantastic. That's wonderful to know. Hope that helps, Wong. Would you have a message for us, Dr. Suresh, on living with osteoporosis?
Get yourself tested. Don't be scared. Don't worry about it. Once you have your calcium and vitamin D levels, if it's low, go see your doctor and make sure that you do three things. Weight-bearing exercise, avoid alcohol and smoking, and get your supplements.
Okay. Dr. Siva?
Yes. In addition to that, one, especially those in Malaysia, those above 50 must be aware that osteoporosis is a silent killer. So as such, see that you're not osteoporotic. Don't wait for a fracture to happen before the diagnosis is made.
Okay, go do a blood test, right?
Yeah. Absolutely, 100%.
Okay, I'm going.
Come and see us.
50 years old next year.
And exercise.
50 years young.
50 years young.
Thank you both very much for joining me today. That was Dr. K.S. Sivanandan, consultant orthopedic trauma and spine surgeon, together with Dr. Suresh Sivanandan, consultant orthopedic arthritis and sports surgeon from LT Orthopedic Hospital, speaking to us about living with osteoporosis on Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.